Hi, welcome. You're listening to the Mike Exchange Podcast, brought to you by St. Michael's College. You'll hear from our larger community on various academic topics and how their experiences have driven them to where they are today.
All right. Well, welcome to the St. Michael's College podcast. My name is Patrick Walsh. I'm an associate professor of economics here at St. Michael's College up in Vermont. And on this podcast, we talk about all the different work that our students are doing, our alumni are doing, different sort of research projects, service. So today I am pleased to be talking to one of our very recent graduates. It's Catherine Marcoulier, and she graduated with a degree in economics and I believe political science. Just this past May of 2020. So she's one of those oddball 2020 graduates, what the heck is happening in my life kind of things. But as we will find out, she's got some actually very cool things happening in my life. So, Catherine, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah. So before we dive into your current kind of setup, I wonder if you just kind of tell us a little bit about how you ended up majoring, kind of picking that double major in econ and political science.
Yeah, so I started my college career with political science already declared as a major. And then I forget what professor it was. I want to say Professor John Hughes was like, okay, why don't you take an econ course in the spring just to fill up some credits? And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I took Introduction to, I believe it was macroeconomics with Professor Natarajan. Mm-hmm. And I just found myself really liking it. I kind of picked up on it. I understood it. And I like the idea of, with political science, we don't get a lot of like qualitative numbers, math,
right. Yeah.
But with econ you do. So it was a nice balance. And then Professor Natarajan talked to me more and she goes, why don't you pick it up as a major? And I was like, okay. And that's basically how it started with econ. And then it started turning into, I guess, my more favored major. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't love political science, but I felt more comfortable.
Everyone's got a favorite child. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope I'm the favorite. But for econ, I just ended up really loving it. In the fall of my sophomore year, I took Introduction to Microeconomics with you and Statistics for Economics. And it's so funny, in high school, I hated statistics. I could not stand it. And then when I took it, I loved it. I like everything about statistics, which ended up actually really helping me in econometrics and the senior thesis. So yeah, huge blessing to pick it up as a major.
Awesome. You ended up doing, a pretty unique abroad experience in your junior year. Mm-hmm. You want to talk a little bit about that and kind of how that came together and what you took away from it?
Yeah, so my junior year, I spent the entire academic year abroad at London School of Economics and Political Science. And it's funny how it started. Sophomore year, I was just scrolling to see where I could go. And I just saw a school, London School of Economics and Political Science. I'm like, that's funny, those are my two majors, let me check it out. And it ended up being like one of the top universities in the world for econ and political science. I had no idea.
Right.
So then I found out the program was a year long and I called up my parents and I was, hey, can I go abroad for a year? And they were all about it.
Cool.
So, yeah, I mean, it was scary at first because, St. Mike's is a small community and everything. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss out on so much going on by being gone for a year. But honestly, I would not trade it for anything. I would rather do a year over again,
Awesome.
The most amazing experience. But London School of Economics, it was extremely rigorous, but not until the end. So the way they had it is they had two terms, Michaelmas term and Lent term, so it's like fall, spring. And in each of those terms, I had the same classes throughout the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
I had four classes, and you'd meet for lecture that was 1 hour for each, and then class, which is 1 hour for each. So for an entire year, I had 8 hours in a week dedicated to like going to class and lecture,
which
is nothing.
Yeah.
And kind of doing the work was almost optional, but you want to keep on track because at the end, you have April off. And then exam season starts. And exam season's for a month and a half. And it is like the most stressful thing ever. All the students are in the library. It's insane. But it was really interesting to see the different studying habits between like the American abroad students and students at LSC. We have very different studying habits. Like, I'm a firm believer that we're kind of like, work smarter, not harder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like work harder and smarter too over there.
Okay. Yeah.
It's so hard to explain, but it was just like, it was a very competitive kind of atmosphere there too.
Yeah.
You know, people wanted to have the highest marks on their exams. People were constantly being like, oh, where's your internship at? Is it at one of the, you know, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs? You know, they have a thing or a saying that like LSC, London School of Economics, breeds bankers. And that was kind of a struggle for me because I loved economics. I really enjoyed political science, but I'm like, I'm not into banking or finance. You know, that's not the route I wanted to go. But I tried to force myself to like that while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, I almost had an identity crisis of like, oh my God, what do I want to do with my life? But it was such a blessing, and you learn a lot about yourself by also learning what you don't want.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, for, you know, you're talking about, you know, when you're applying, you're like, oh, London School, you know, economics and political science, those are my two interests. That's great. And it turns out to be like, you know, one of the top universities in the world, you know, so for people, you know, I think people listening to this, you know, some of them are going to be like, oh my gosh, I did LSC, that's amazing. For the other half who are kind of like more in your situation going into it, saying, oh yes, I spent a semester or a year abroad at LSC. I mean, that's kind of like saying, yeah, I did a year at MIT. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. That was, sounds like a really valuable.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm so beyond grateful for like every experience there. And London itself, like taking LSC out of the picture, London is an amazing city. I still talk about it and I say how you can never be bored.
Right.
You walk out the door and there's something to do. And there's so much diversity at LSC in London, so many different cultures. It's just amazing.
And the good news is over there, most of the people, from what I understand, have learned to speak some English. So that was a joke. That was hilarious. That was funny.
Yeah, kind of went.
Okay, enough of the dad jokes. So you came back to St. Michael's College after LSC and going into your senior year. Talk a little bit about, you know, sort of the process of homing in kind of on a topic and then even on a question for your senior thesis. Actually, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you now. so our listeners know, every economics major needs to do a capstone senior research thesis, because they need to write basically a research paper. And that's true for pretty much all of the different majors at St. Nicholas College. What's what may be a little bit unique, I think, with econ is that it's a full two semester sequence. So it goes, you know, you have that full two semesters to produce that research product. So anyway, so back to Catherine here. Sorry, talk about kind of the process of kind of narrowing in on your topic.
Yeah, for sure. So I knew with my topic I wanted to do international development. You know, when I came home from LSC, I was just trying to figure out, you know, go back to my roots. What did I enjoy? And Professor Nader Ajan, I believe, has her PhD in economic development, I believe. So talking with her, I was always interested in international development. How are other countries using econ to improve or change their lives. So when I got home, I got kind of grounded in that. So I knew I wanted my question to be based on that. And like I said, I love different cultures and seeing how different people live their lives. But of course, that means there's some struggles going on in different cultures that need to, you know, be fixed or addressed. Yeah, I knew I wanted to do international development, but I was trying to figure out, okay, where, like, what area do I want to look at? And my boyfriend was in the process of getting, you know, plane tickets to go to Africa for the winter. So I'm like, Africa seems cool.
Right.
Like a lot of this is me just like being like, sounds good to me. Like, sounds cool. Why not?
Yeah. Totally.
And ends up working out. But as I researched more into Africa, I'm like, you know, there's a lot of developing countries in Africa. I don't know if people fully understand, you know, what they may need to improve the quality of life there. Mm-hmm. So then I get into this thinking idea. It's like, okay, well, I guess in the Western world, we have this very like broad assumption that, oh, you know, if the economy grows, then people's lives will improve, you know, a very general statement. But I'm like, okay, well, if the economy grows in Africa, in certain developing countries, because it changes with each country, of course,
sure, right.
how will that change them? So I try to find an indicator for economic growth, and I thought trade openness. And, you know, like I said, a lot of this is me just deciding, hey, I'll do that, and then researching after to see if it makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when I looked at trade openness, I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect to look at, because Africa only has 2% of the world trade, yet has probably the highest amount of resources.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And then looking further on, I found that even a 1.8% increase in Africa's share of the world trade, and this is from my paper, would actually generate $7 billion of additional income annually.
Right.
So I'm like, all right. So obviously this has to improve the lives somehow.
Right.
So then I have to find social and human development indicators, and I chose like broadly looking at education, environment, health, and infrastructure. Because all of those go hand in hand, and that ended up kind of creating my question: how does openness affect development in African countries through the use of the following human and social development indicators: education, mm-hmm. environment, health, and infrastructure? Mm-hmm. And it just, I'm so lucky that everything just like lined up perfectly following that question, you know?
So pausing a second on sort of the technical nerdy details of your thesis, which we'll get back to. You know, this is like, you know, listeners, don't worry, we'll get into the weeds of econometrics. That's why everyone's tuning in. But you know, a real kind of theme that I'm hearing kind of from your experience, whether it's in LSE or you know, kind of you know, approaching your thesis, is really kind of following your passion. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, so with LSE, you know, a lot of people going into banking, and you're kind of finding you're not real interested in that, you know, but then, you know, when it comes to, you know, picking something to do research on, you know, rather than being like super tactical about it and very maybe even cynical, you're like, this is interesting. Right. I think, you know, a lot of people, especially high school and college, think that they have to, you know, stuff their passions aside and you know, be very kind of mercenary about, you know, what kind of work they do. And you seem to have met a lot of success by doing the opposite, by just like, okay.
Yeah, I like the idea of kind of just going with the flow and rolling with the punches, because my mom has always told me, do what you love and the money will follow. And, you know, it doesn't have to be money every time. Like research what you love, and the results will follow, like in terms of the thesis, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, I am a strong believer that everything, almost like, if you have trust in whatever higher thing is out there, I don't know, but if you have trust that everything will align as it should in a way. And it's just, yeah, that's how I like to go. I don't like being too structured, because then there's no wiggle room in a sense, at least in my head. for some people, that's perfect and works for them.
Sure.
But for me, I'm like, that sounds cool. Let's see what's up with it, you know?
And, you know, I think it's especially for, like I said, for people in high school or early in college, it can be very tempting to kind of like plot out every single step, for your next couple of years, you know, because it's sort of, you know, almost psychologically, it's a way to like pretend you have control over the future, which, you know, if 2020 has taught us anything, is this is like, nope. Like life is going to happen. The world is going to happen. But, you know, whereas, I like your phrase of roll with the punches, you know, just sort of, you know, accumulate skills, accumulate experiences, and because you never know what's going to kind of drop into your lap.
Exactly.
Okay. So back to what we all care deeply about, which is data and econometrics, you know, that's the exciting part. So you've got kind of this focus, you've kind of got this topic in terms of, you know, looking at this relationship between openness to trade and these different metrics of development in, you know, various African countries. Then comes what is usually the hard part for a lot of students, although for you, it seemed like it went decently well, was finding the data for all of that. Yeah. Talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, so for finding the data, for me, I was just kind of Googling, because I love, Google.
That's the way to go. That's a great place to start.
I was just looking at like data sets, Africa development, and then I stumbled across this amazing, beautiful, group called the African Development Bank Group. Mm-hmm. And they had a plethora of data sets that were all based on human and social development. And then they also had data sets from the World Trade Organization and the World Bank. So I knew to look there too. So finding data on stuff I wanted was so easy, which I word of caution to any rising seniors in econ, this might not be the case. I was extremely lucky. However, I mean, there were caveats to that, because I was researching developing African areas or countries, some countries didn't have sufficient data because collecting the data, they either did not have the resources to do so, or say if it was a researcher, the country may not have been safe enough to go. For instance, I didn't have any data on Djibouti or Somalia. My guess is either they didn't have the resources or there were, high areas of conflict at the time where the data was being collected. So, but I was able to look at approximately 44 countries with sufficient data, some 40 to 44 depending, but yeah, I looked out on finding data, but honestly, World Bank, World Trade Organization, amazing to look at. And if anyone can find a niche group or organization that has data on something specific they're looking at, it's a blessing.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons I bring that up is because a lot of, having worked with, a lot of seniors over the years, putting together their thesis research. I think an easy pitfall for people to fall into is sort of get my data, and they assume that that's an afternoon. It is not. Now, in your case, it did come together fairly easily, but there are people who will spend months trying to track down all of the last little data details. So, you shouldn't keep us in suspense any longer. What did you find in your results?
I found that trade openness was positive and statistically significant for access to safe water, arable land, life expectancy, and the multidimensional poverty index. Okay. And what the multidimensional poverty index is, MPI, is just used as a human development indicator because it measures deprivations in education, health, standards of living, and it identifies different levels of poverty as well at the household level. So with that, I was like, all right, interesting. So trade openness is significant to access to safe water, arable land, life expectancy, and the multidimensional poverty index. However, I had another variable, the gross national income per capita, that was statistically significant for five explanatory variables. So what I did was I wanted to see how trade openness and the gross national income affected each other.
Gotcha. Right.
So because the gross national income was statistically significant for five of the human and social development indicators, which is more than openness. So I'm like, all right, what's up here?
Yeah.
So I did a separate regression without GNI to see the effect that it did have on openness, on the openness coefficient, and on development. So when the gross national income or GNI was removed, it actually had a negative effect on development. So So basically what this is saying for anyone listening is that it's showing that the economic growth cannot be the sole factor in improving development. I know that sounds difficult to like take out of that sentence, but that's basically what it means.
Yeah.
And I know you helped me so much with coming to this conclusion, because I was like, all right, what does this mean with GNI? We were like, what? But when we figured it out, it was like an aha moment, because understanding that economic growth cannot be the sole factor in improving development really follows along with two papers or literature reviews that I discussed in my thesis. One being a Marty Ascent's capabilities approach, which basically says there are certain capabilities and limitations that affect how people can use resources or improve development. And there's one by Professor Reynes of Yale University, who says that developing countries that focus too hard on economic growth and not human development will actually find themselves in vicious cycles of development, whereas countries that focus on human development more than economic growth will find themselves in virtuous cycles.
And kind of get the best of both worlds, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it basically, my paper's proving those points where it's like, you need to improve human and social development if you want to see economic growth, which will in turn further improve.
Right.
Human
now,
and social.
Would it be accurate to sort of summarize the results as kind of saying, for these human development and poverty indicators, to improve those, economic growth, just, growth in people's incomes, is necessary but not sufficient? Like it's sort of the foundation, but you need more than that. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. And I'd say that really honing in on this goes even further of if we're looking at a developing country, say if we're looking at maybe Burkina Faso in Africa, we have to see, what's going on there for the communities, the people that needs to be addressed? Because if those issues aren't addressed, then economic growth won't necessarily matter. If there's health issues, education issues,
it's not automatic.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So.
And the issues in one country might be entirely night and day different from even the neighboring country.
Oh, 100%. I don't know if people understand how huge Africa is and how each country is just so unique from the other, so.
So turning now, I know you have actually a really, really cool opportunity coming up that is kind of right smack in the middle of all this work. So you've graduated, you're an actual grown up now, tell us about the your kind of next steps here.
So I'm beginning an internship that will eventually evolve into a full-time position at a nonprofit called Healthy Villages. So it's like the word health letter E, and then Villages. Mm-hmm. And what that nonprofit does is it brings health services, resources, education to developing communities in developing countries. So Healthy Villages has had and currently has projects in Haiti, Kenya, Tanzania, Cameroon, and they've been to India, China, and now we're going to be working with another nonprofit called Last Mile Health in Liberia, mm-hmm. in Malawi. So it's, I can't wait for it. It's all remote, which is what I want because
super convenient.
Yeah. It's so convenient. I get to travel if remote, you know, there's this thing coming up now called like digital nomads,
right? Yeah.
Where they work and travel. Because I want to experience different parts of the world, different cultures, but it's this opportunity is amazing because it lines up so perfectly to kind of what the basis of my thesis is. Mm-hmm. And the coolest part of it is that Healthy Villages is working with other nonprofits, NGOs, and grassroots organizations within those countries because we understand that, okay, those groups fully understand the culture, the lifestyle of those communities. So obviously they know the best approach to those people. And
so it's not like a bunch of white people parachuting in and saying, here's your solution, and then running off.
It's yeah, basically.
It's more collaborative kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. There's been amazing projects. There's one, perhaps the most successful is called the Lawala Community Alliance in Lawala, Kenya. It's right by Lake Victoria, and they've improved like neonatal care, giving beds to mothers with births. The birth rate has like increased tenfold. It's just been amazing. And they've seen such a difference, and the Lawala Community Alliance has grown so much that they're actually going to try to eventually expand to other areas of East Africa.
Awesome.
So I'm so grateful to be part of this now.
Now, do you know it? You know, it sounds like it's going to start in the fall. So, you know, you haven't really dug into it just yet, but do you know if you're going to be sort of, because you have this kind of quanti background from your econ thesis, are you going to be kind of on the data side, or are you going to be sort of like a country expert on one area, or?
Actually I have a data set that's like minimized on my computer right now for a Kajabi Hospital in Kenya that I'm just going to look at data to see how the iPads given or tablets given to this hospital have helped procedures. So I'll be working with data with, I'll be working with board members, kind of organizing events, talking with other nonprofits, seeing like, all right, like, you know, what's going on, where you guys are, what do you need? So kind of a mix of organizational and coordination, and a mix of data as well. So I'm excited.
So just to kind of wrap up here, because we could talk all day about this.
Oh, 100%. You know,
it's like super interesting. I wonder if you had any kind of career advice, for somebody early in college, or maybe even late in high school, and they're trying to. They want to get where you are, in a couple of years. What advice would you give them?
I would say your career plans are going to change, like maybe every month. You're going to have a different idea of what you're going to do. And then you're going to be like, I don't want to do that. And one day I feel like it'll just come to you.
Yeah.
And it may be where I was like senior year college being like, I know I want to do this. It may come earlier, or it may be after you graduate. We have our entire lives to work, and you want to make sure that you're doing a career that you're passionate in and love. And I'd say just go with the flow. We're young, we don't have to have it all figured out yet.
Right.
Now. And I think when you go with the flow, opportunities present yourself or present themselves to you. Yeah. That's what I meant.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for talking with us and talking with the current or future St. Mike's students, or you know, whoever's interested in this kind of development, economics, data, you know, kind of non-NGO kind of work. And do keep in touch. Keep us updated. You know, about your travels and about the job that's kind of evolving at this NGO. That's super exciting.
Yeah, of course.
All right, so that was Catherine Marcoulier, who graduated from St. Michael's College just in May of 2020 with a double major in economics and political science. And if you're a parent or even a student, kind of where it's just like, what are you going to do with that major? You know, like, send somebody this podcast, right? It'd be like, this woman who came out of St. Michael's College, right? You know, listen to what she's doing. So.
All right. So much.
Take care.
Yeah, you too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Mike Exchange. If you're interested and want to learn more, check out our other episodes.